start by saying, I don't know if you've watched the weather prognosticators, but they are saying tomorrow's a chance and I should have prayed again for those down in Louisiana, Mississippi, in Arkansas, western Tennessee. They are going under severe thunderstorms with potential for tornadoes. Weather Channel says there's a chance for a tornado. They have a scale from 1 to 10 for tornadoes called the TORCOM. Yeah, TORCOM. And it, or was it TORCON? C-O-N, right? Condition, yeah, TORCON. And it's a 3. So between 1 and 10, it's a 3. So that's not horrible. And Renee and I were planning on driving down tomorrow to Tennessee, and we decided to postpone it one day to where the weather's a lot better. So anyway, thank you for coming. I'm just curious, as we turn back to the book of Habakkuk, how many, have any of you in the last week gone through the book of Habakkuk? Just out of curiosity, a few of you have. Any of you have thoughts on what the book of Habakkuk, some of the many things in the book of Habakkuk, did anything stand out to any of you as to what's in the book? Yes, ma'am. Yes, he was very discouraged. Yes, very discouraged. What was he, anybody, what was he discouraged about? All the bad things that were going on. You ever get discouraged about all the bad things going on in this nation? I bet you do. And so he was, and I mentioned to you in the announcement that I gave, it's a really different book. And first of all, it's poetic all the way through except the first and last verse. And look at the very last verse. It says, and it's part of the Hebrew, to the chief musician with my stringed instruments. So Hebrew poetry is in music and is often accompanied with a song. Now, how much of this was a song? It's Habakkuk, like David. David would have something happen in his life and he would write a song about it. It's not that sad, but anyway. David would have something bad in his life or good in his life, he'd write a song about it. Or troubles and how God worked it out, he'd write a song about it. So Habakkuk did that, and so a lot of what is in here is poetry. And in fact, it's all poetry, and how much of it's music, I don't know. At least the last chapter is a song. And it's possible the first two chapters are part of the song, but we don't. They're at least poetry, except the very first verse where it says, the burden which the prophet Habakkuk saw, a prophecy. But it's interesting, as I mentioned, it doesn't begin with God coming to Habakkuk. And it said, as many of them say, the word of the Lord came to Zephaniah, came to Micah, came to, Zechariah, whatever. That didn't happen. It starts out, and this is apparently, it doesn't give the time frame, but it is apparently after the death of Josiah, who was the last good king. And then they went through a few different kings, and the Babylonians were threatening. And we're now the world dominant empire, at least in the biblical world. And horrible people, horrible empire. Babylon or Chaldean, they were cruel, they were fierce, they were awful. But in Judah, this time, it would have been, Jeremiah would have been preaching. And he would have been, he was a Jeremiah, which means he's preaching doom and gloom. And the reason is, everything was going downhill after the death of Josiah. I mean, the nation just went off into paganism and lawlessness. And then finally the Babylonians came. And they took away some of the people to Babylon, including Ezekiel. So he went there. Now, Habakkuk starts off by saying, God, why aren't you doing something to straighten us out? There's violence. There's crime. Things are going bad to worse. Why aren't you doing anything? God says, basically, don't worry, Habakkuk. Don't worry. I'm going to take care of this. You know how I'm going to do it? I'm going to bring the Chaldeans. Habakkuk says, you're bringing the Chaldeans? Look, I'm trying to see Judah straighten out. What the Chaldeans will do is destroy us. And they're worse than we are. God, you're fair. You're honest. It's not for you to see evil. How can you let people who are worse than us, see, wouldn't you like the United States to be straightened out? How many of you want the United States to be straightened out by being destroyed? And two-thirds killed, and the rest go into captivity. No, you'd like to see honesty and truth and obedience and love and fairness and all those good things. You're not saying, God, straighten out America by letting nine-tenths of us die or whatever. Am I not on there? You lost it. Okay. I'm a small man with a big voice, so you're hearing me anyway, aren't you? So. We're alive. I hear it. There we go. I don't hear it coming back, though. So it's not the mic. Mike's okay. Nice guy. So he says, God, how can you do that? That's not fair that you let these people who are worse than us. Look at how horrible they are. God says, Habakkuk, don't worry about it. I'm going to take care of it. After the Chaldeans destroy Judah, I'm going to destroy the Chaldeans. Wait. That's not what Habakkuk was asking. He wasn't asking, well, let the Chaldeans destroy us and then destroy the Chaldeans. He's thinking, this is an answer. This is not the answer I was asking about. This is not what I was wanting. And so then he has to make a decision. He says, God, that's not fair. But after he looks at it, he says, whatever you say, I will trust you. In that sense, it's a lot like the book of Job. The book of Job, we sort of understand the book of Job in a way that Job didn't understand it. Because we have the first couple of chapters that tell about God and Satan having a conversation. Job was thinking, God's punishing me because he thinks I'm a sinner. And I'm not. But what he doesn't realize is that God said Job was righteous. God trusted Job to do what was right. It was Satan who said, well, he'll sin to your face. He'll curse you to your face. And God said, well, God didn't believe it. And Job did come through. He doubted, but he didn't curse God. And at the end, God never really answered Job. We don't know if Job ever knew why he had the trouble. We don't know if he ever knew that God and Satan had that discussion. He may have known that before he died. We know it, but Job didn't know it. And whether he ever knew it, we don't know. He will eventually know it if he didn't. But Job finally says, "You are God and you are right. And I am nothing. And I know you're right." And so Habakkuk comes to the same decision. He says, "You are God, and whatever you do, I will trust you." And the last three verses of the book of Habakkuk, I printed out and have kept where I pray. Whenever I go, when you're a church pastor, you get the joy of being with people at their happiest moments. Blessing of little children, weddings. But you're also with people at the saddest moments. Death of a child, death of a mate, sickness, disease in the hospital. And so after a while, you just have to say, "Well, God, I trust you." And that's what Habakkuk came to as the very last three verses. He says, "Whatever you do, I will trust you. Whatever you do, I will trust you." And so, let's start off. And by the way, some of this is in parable form. Let's read it here. Start off in chapter 1, the burden which the prophet Habakkuk saw. And you notice, and we mentioned this, Hebrew poetry is parallelism. That is, you say the same thing twice, but in a little different way. Verse 2, "O Lord, how long shall I cry, and you will not hear?" Pretty discouraging, right? "Even cry out to you violence, and you will not save." See how he's repeated the same thing? That's a characteristic of Hebrew poetry. It's called parallelism. He's saying the same thing, a little differently, saying it twice. "Why do you show me iniquity?" See, this is not God coming to Habakkuk. This is Habakkuk complaining to God. "And cause me to see trouble, for plundering and violence are before me. There is strife and contention arises. Therefore the law is powerless." Sounds like some of our cities we have today. Some of our nation, our world. "And justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous. Therefore perverse judgment proceeds." Now, in my Bible, the translators knew this story. So the next thing they have as a little headline is God's first reply. God's going to reply. Any of you have that in your Bible where you have something like that? There you go. All right, we have what mine starts off at before verse 1 saying the first problem of Habakkuk, first thing that's bothering him, is the troubles in Judah. And God has, since Josiah's death. And he says, it's a problem. Now God's going to reply. This is not the reply that Habakkuk wanted. "Look among the nations and watch. Be utterly astounded. For I will work a work in your days which you would not believe though it were told you." That's quoted in the New Testament. But here he's saying, I'm going to do something amazing that just hard to even believe. "For indeed, I am raising up the Chaldeans." That's the Babylonian Empire, Nebuchadnezzar. "A bitter and hasty nation, which marches through the breadth of the earth to possess dwelling places that are not theirs." By the way, you'll notice that the right side of each column is not justified. When it is justified, In other words, it's a straight column on both sides. That's prose. But when it is this way, where they only go part way, they know it's Hebrew poetry. So that's part of the reason you know it's poetry. Or they knew it was poetry. So he says, "To which marches through the breadth of the earth to possess dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity proceed from themselves." Now, I want you to notice this poetry is going to be hyperbole, as poetry often is, Hebrew poetry. That is, it's like I come to you, you say something, "Well, the traffic is always bad in Dayton." Well, that's hyperbole. And so it's not always bad, but you say, "It's always bad in Dayton. And the weather never stays the same. It's always changing. And the weathermen are never right." That's hyperbole. And then I come to you and I say, "Haven't I told you a million times not to exaggerate?" See? So, that's hyperbole. So notice what it says. "Their horses also are swifter than leopards." That's hyperbole. "And more fierce than evening wolves." You know, you and I don't think of horses as being fierce. But he's telling what? "Their chargers charge ahead. Their cavalry comes from afar. They fly as the eagle that hastens to eat." Boy, every now and then my voice gets stronger. You notice that? "They all come for violence. Their faces are set like the east wind." They came from the east in that sense. "They gather captives like sand. They scoff at kings. Then princes are scorned by them. They deride every stronghold, for they heap up mounds of earth and seize it." Then his mind changes and he transgresses. He commits offense. This is still God talking. "Imputing this power to his God." So God says, they're going to come, they're going to be fierce, they're going to be really bad. What kind of answer is this? You're asking God to straighten out Judah and make things right. And you're sending these people? And they're worse than we are. So now Habakkuk, and my Bible has the printing, it's not in the Hebrew, the second problem of Habakkuk. Now Habakkuk's got a bigger problem. It's worse than the problems in Judah. That is, the Chaldeans are coming, the Babylonians, Nebuchadnezzar. This is even worse. And so here's what Habakkuk says. "You can't do this, God. This isn't fair. Aren't you fair? You're going to send somebody worse than us to punish us?" 12, verse 12. "Are you not from everlasting? Oh, Lord, my God, my Holy One, we shall not die." You're not just going to kill us all, are you? "Oh, Lord," and this should be a question, "you have appointed them for judgment?" You're sending people worse than us? "Oh, Rock, you have marked them for correction?" Well, you can't do that. "You are of purer eyes than to behold evil." This is evil, to let the Chaldeans, who are worse than we are, punish us. "And cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours? One more righteous than he." We're better than they are. Can you look at this, Father, and let the Chaldeans punish us? "Why do you make men like fish of the sea?" Now he's going to talk about fishing. Did any of you read this about the fishing and wonder why he brings in fishing right here. You thought about it? Did you figure out an answer? Why he brings up fishermen right at this point? Did anybody have a suggestion on why he... This is a parable. Why he throws in this parable about fishing and what it means. Well, this is Habakkuk.
I was thinking about a lot, maybe.
A lot.
Fish and a net.
Mm-hmm.
How
many of you fish? You like to fish or occasionally fish? How many of you, when you fished and you brought in a fish, where you were happy? You were happy you caught a fish, right? How many of you felt sorry for the fish? You did? Some of you did? All right, just a little bit? All right, can you imagine fishermen who are out fishing? Remember how Jesus told them, put the net on the other side? And they brought in so many fish and the net didn't tear. Do you think they were happy catching all those fish? Or did they feel sorry for the fish? Huh? Happy, right? Most fishermen. All these fish are in the boat. I brought in fish. And the fish is flopping around down there trying to get away. And most fishermen, they don't feel sorry for that fish. It's just a fish. You know what that fish... You know, if you were pulling in a little plug, looked like a little tiny fish, and that you caught that fish and you'd say, oh, I feel sorry. Wait a second. That fish was trying to eat another fish. It didn't care about the little fish it was about to eat. It thought that plug you were pulling in was a fish. Fish don't worry about other fish. And fishermen normally, especially regular fishermen, are happy when there's a fish down in the bottom of the boat that's flopping around. They don't feel sorry for it. What he's saying is the Chaldeans are like fishermen, and all the nations that they go to, when they're killing people, ripping women open who have babies, hanging people up, flaying them as they sometimes did, don't care a fig about those people. In other words, they're like fishermen, and all the nations are just like fish. And they don't even care. So Habakkuk is saying, you're sending people who have no compassion at all. They're like fishermen. It's a parable. Why do you make men like fish of the sea, like creeping things that have no ruler over them? They take up all of them with a hook. They catch them in their net and gather them in their dragnet. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore, they sacrifice to their net, you know, like pagans, sacrificing to their net, the net god, and burn incense to their dragnet, because by them their share is sumptuous and their food plenteous. Shall they therefore empty their net and continue to slay nations without pity? There's the point. These are evil people. They're like, they treat people like fish. That's his point. So then chapter 2, which probably should have been part of chapter 1. Now Habakkuk says, God told me, I complained to God. He answered me with an answer I don't like. And now I've gone back to him and tell him this is not the right answer. I'm complaining about his answer now. And he says, I'm going to wait and see what God says. I will stand my watch and set myself on the rampart and watch to see what he will say to me and what I will answer when I am reproved. I want to know what God's going to answer me because I have complained about Judah. Now I'm complaining about the Chaldeans, and I'm going to go up here and I'm going to wait for God to answer. You know, he must have had some kind of a relationship with God to where he felt that he could go to God and God would answer him. I mean, literally, verbally answer him. Now remember, all this is poetry. Like David, who had problems and things, and he would write poetry about it later, and a song. So here's, and my the printers of my Bible put in God's second reply. So what's the answer? It's not going to be the answer that Habakkuk was asking. God never really answers him. God never really answered Job as to why he allowed Job to have all that come upon him. He just said, Job, I'm God. Where were you when I created the earth? You're just a man. You know nothing, and I am God. Well, what kind of answer is that? But Job accepted it. Then the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain on tablets, that he may run who reads it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time. Now, this did happen in Habakkuk's life. But it is also for us. It's also for the end time. Just as the destruction of Judah happened more than once. Happened under Nebuchadnezzar. Happened under Vespasian and Titus, the Romans. And it's going to happen again. The vision is yet for an appointed time. But at the end, it will speak, and it will not lie, though it tarries. It didn't wait a long time for Habakkuk. But for us, it's going to tarry. Wait for it. Because it will surely come, it will not tarry. Let me just say, we've been waiting and waiting and waiting, but it will come at the end time. Behold the proud. Now he's talking about the Chaldeans. They're the proud. His soul is not upright in him. And then he says something, but the just shall live by his faith. So God is saying, Habakkuk, you're going to have to live by your faith. This little statement, the just shall live by his faith, is quoted 3 times in the New Testament. Twice by Paul, Romans chapter 1, verse 17. In Romans 1, verse 17. In Galatians 3, verse 11. Galatians 3, verse 11. And Hebrews chapter 10, verse 38. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 38. Now, I said quoted twice by Paul. We know twice. Maybe 3 times. But maybe you realize there is some question as to who wrote the book of Hebrews. And many believe it was Paul, definitely. But it does not say in the book of Hebrews who wrote it. It does not say. So there is disagreement. But anyway, it's in Hebrews 10, verse 38 also. Now he's going to continue talking about the Chaldeans. Indeed, because he transgresses by wine. He is a proud man, and he does not stay at home. He doesn't stay in Chaldea. He's got to go out marching around. Because he enlarges his desire as hell, or we could say the grave. Sheol is the Hebrew. Is the grave ever filled? Bible talks about it. The grave is death, and the grave are never satisfied. They always need more. Every precious little birth means there's going to be another death. If you have 4 children, there are going to be 4 deaths that you have created, because every one of them is going to die. If you only have 2 children, you've only created 2 deaths. So the grave is never satisfied. He enlarges his desire as Sheol, and he is like death and cannot be satisfied. Can't satisfy. There's always more. There is going to come a time when God's going to do away with death, but it's not now. He gathers to himself all nations and heaps up for himself all peoples. Shall not all these take up a proverb against him? Now, when a nation is a great empire and is taking over other nations, everybody hates that nation because they all want freedom. So if the Chaldeans come in and they say, we're in charge now, we'll leave you alone if you'll send tribute every year. And that's fine. It's like a protection racket. It's like the mob. That is, you're okay, you send us tribute every year, and we'll protect you from other nations. Like when the mob comes in to a mom and pop store in Detroit and says, hey, we'll make you a deal you cannot pass up. We are here to protect you from the gangsters, and we would like you to pay us protection. And we will protect you. You get the point? Nothing bad will happen. But if you don't pay us, you know bad things are going to happen. It's a deal you cannot pass up. Hey. Everybody dislikes it. And that's the way they are about empires. About the Roman Empire. Everybody wanted freedom from them. But anyway, so all the nations that they conquer are going to take up a proverb against him and a taunting riddle against him and say, woe to him who increases what is not his. How long? Everybody's going to say, woe to you, Chaldea. Woe to you, Babylon, taking what doesn't belong to you. Woe to you. You know, like the song, happy he who does to you what you did to us. That's a psalm. And to him who loads himself with many pledges, that is, you take, where if you take something from somebody, it's like a pledge. Now you owe. So if I come into your yard and I take something from you and say, look, we need to take this from you, then the person's saying, I want you to pay me back. He may not say it out loud, but he's praying, God, make that. Pay that person back for what he's done to me. He took all this. So it's like a pledge. So if I come and steal, I've written a pledge indirectly. God says, you stole from that person? You owe to that person. I'm going to make you pay for what you did to that individual. So the Chaldeans were writing IOUs every time they went into a nation and stole from them. Will not your creditors rise up suddenly? Everybody's going to be against Babylon. The Medes and the Persians came in and said, we've had enough of this, and they destroyed. They went in and conquered Babylonia. Will they not awaken who oppress you? And you will become their booty. You're going to be paid back. And for Babylon, it was the Medes and Persians that paid them back. Because you have plundered many nations, all the remnant of the people shall plunder you. They're all going to rejoice when you fall. Because of men's blood and the violence of the land and the city and of all who dwell in it. Woe to him. God is saying, woe to the Chaldeans, to him who covets evil gain for his house, that he may set his nest on high, which is what the Babylonians did in beautiful Babylon, that he may be delivered from the power of disaster. You gave shameful counsel to your house, cutting off many peoples, and sinned against your soul. So he's saying, yes, Chaldea, you did it. You're going to get it back in spades. For the stone will cry out from the wall. Now, this is a parable. Is it sure that everybody's going to be against Chaldea? Are you kidding me? Even the stones will cry out from the wall against Chaldea. That's hyperbole. And the beam from the timbers will answer it. So the stone in the wall of a house cries out against Chaldea, and the beam across the top of the roof answers. Now that's real hyperbole. That's poetry. And what are they going to say? Woe to him who builds a town with bloodshed. Babylon was built with bloodshed. Who establishes a city by iniquity. Behold, is it not the Lord of hosts that the peoples labor to feed the fire, and nations weary themselves in vain? For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as waters cover the sea. Throws in a little prophecy of the end time. That there is going to be a modern Babylon. And will it be destroyed? Yes. What do we read in Revelation 17 and 18? Babylon. Babylon the Great. So he's really, this is not just a prophecy of the physical city of Babylon. It's also a prophecy of the end time with Babylon the Great. And what's going to happen when Babylon falls, Babylon the Great? The earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. When God destroys Babylon, Babylon the great harlot that has ruled the world. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbor. Now, what is this talking about? It's not talking about you going next door and taking a bottle of wine. It's talking about Babylon was like a man who went to his neighbor and made him drunk. But Babylon went to all of the nations around them and made them drink the wine of the wrath of Babylon, of Chaldea. So he's using, once again, a parable of Babylon being a man going to the surrounding nations and making them drunk by going in and destroying them. Just like getting somebody, your neighbor, drunk is destroying that man. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbor. It's not talking about wine, it's talking about wrath. Just like God uses wine in the book of Revelation and says, you're going to drink the wine of the wrath, of my wrath. I'm going to pour out the full cup. Pressing him to your bottle, even to make him drunk, that you may look on his nakedness. Talking about destroying nations. You are filled with shame instead of glory. You also drink. You think it's fun to destroy other nations? It's going to happen to you. You also drink and be exposed as uncircumcised. Just like a drunk might not be wearing all his clothes. And you can see his private parts. And you'll be exposed as uncircumcised. The cup of the Lord's right hand will be turned against you. You're going to get the same treatment you gave to others. And utter shame will be on your glory. For the violence done to Lebanon, which is one of the nations they conquered, will cover you. And the plunder of beasts, which made them afraid. Remember how I said that their horses were swifter than leopards and how fierce they were? Well, the plunder of beasts, which made them afraid that you did to others because of men's blood, and the violence of the land and the city and of all who dwell in it. Then he's going to talk about Babylon's worship of idols. That it's just like the Babylon the Great is an idol in the book of Revelation, chapter 13. What profit is the image that its maker should carve it? The molded image, a teacher of lies. That's one of the characteristics of the Babylonian mystery system. Is idolatry. A teacher of lies, that the maker of its mold should trust in it. To make mute idols. They can't do anything, but they're idol worshipers. Woe to him who says to wood, awake, carving an image out of wood, and say, now you're a god. To silence stone, so making an image out of stone. Arise, It shall teach. We're going to learn from this idol. Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver. And in it there's no breath at all. It's not alive. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Now that's going to be a future. Let all the earth keep silence before him. So once again it is dropped to the end time when Babylon the Great will be destroyed. God will build a temple. He will dwell in it. And let all the earth keep silent before him. Now, Habakkuk has a choice. It wasn't the answer he was looking for. What's he going to do? He's going to have faith. God did not answer him the way he wanted. Really didn't give him an answer to his question. Sort of like when Jeremiah asked God, what about the 70 years prophecy? Let me go back. Ezekiel asked God about Jeremiah's 70-year prophecy. What about the 70 years? When are we going to be restored? Jeremiah said, you said through Jeremiah to be 70 years. So isn't it getting about time? Explain this 70-year prophecy to me. What did God answer him? Gave him the 70-week prophecy. Totally different. Totally different. He asked about the 70-year prophecy of Jeremiah. He gives him the 70-week prophecy. So, it ends up being totally different. And so he asked. Now, it says a prayer of Habakkuk the prophet on Shigionoth, if I'm pronouncing it right. My margin says exact meaning unknown. I think the song begins here because it's a term that's also used in the Psalms. That same Hebrew word is used in the Psalms. So he says, a prayer, and this is a song prayer, of Habakkuk the prophet on Shigionoth. So I should say, by the way, I said there were two verses that were not poetry. That verse also is not poetry. So there are three sentences. So here starts, and the rest of chapter 3, except the last verse where it says to the chief musician, is all a song. O Lord, I have heard your speech and was afraid. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known. And then he makes a statement that all of us should remember. In wrath, remember mercy. O God, correct me in mercy. Not in your anger, lest I am brought to nothing. So I have this verse, that last part marked. In wrath, remember mercy. God, now this is poetry. God came from Teman, the Holy One from Mount Paran, Selah, which they think means stop and think about that. Are all of you thinking about it? They think that means that. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise. This is end time. His brightness was like the light. He had rays flashing from his hand, and there his power was hidden in his hand. Before him went pestilence, end time. and fever followed at his feet. Return of Jesus Christ. He stood and measured the earth. He looked and startled the nations. Well, this is poetry. And the everlasting mountains were scattered. There may be some literal to that. The perpetual hills bowed. God says he's going to lower every high place and raise every low place. That's physical, but it's also spiritual. His ways are everlasting. I saw the tents of Cushan in affliction, another name for Cush, which means black, and is usually translated, Cush usually translated Ethiopia, but it wasn't just Ethiopia. So even Africa. The curtains of the land of Midian trembled. O Lord, were you displeased with the rivers? Remember the plagues, the trumpet plagues that come? And what are the first ones going to be? First four. It's going to be on the rivers, going to be on the sea. Third of the sea turns to blood. Third of the rivers turn to blood. But then in the bowl plagues, all of the ocean turns to blood. Every last bit. And everything in the ocean dies. And then God restores it later when the waters go out and heal. It says to the east and to the west it will heal the seas when the water goes out of the temple. O Lord, were you displeased with the rivers? Was your anger against the rivers? Was your wrath against the sea when he destroys everything in it? That you rode on your horses, poetry, your chariots of salvation. Wow. I thought I had a good voice before. Strong. Your chariots of salvation. Your bow was made quite ready. Oaths were sworn over your arrows. Now, that's what nations would do. They would take their arrows and say, I swear that I'm going to do this with this arrows to my enemy and thus such. So they're using that poetic. It isn't that God really comes down with arrows, but that's his poetry. You divided the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you and trembled. The overflowing of the water passed by. The deep, that's the ocean, uttered its voice and lifted its hands on high like giant waves. The sun and moon stood still in their habitation. That's going to happen. It's already happened before. It's going to happen again. At the light of your arrows they went, at the shining of your glittering spear. You marched through the land in indignation. You trampled the nations in anger. You went forth for the salvation of your people. For salvation with your anointed. You'll notice the translators probably in your Bible, the A is in capital because the word is Messiah in the Hebrew. For salvation with your Messiah. You struck the head from the house of the wicked by laying bare from foundation to neck. Talking about symbolic of a human being. Laying them bare, foundation to neck. You thrust through with his own arrows the head of his villages. They came out like a whirlwind to scatter me. Their rejoicing was like feasting on the poor in secret. You walked through the sea with your horses, through the heap of great waters. When I heard, all right, now Habakkuk is saying, I know that you are going to come down in fierceness and wrath, and there is going to be a tribulation. There is going to be great warfare, and all the nations of the earth will suffer. The hills will jump. The seas are going to be destroyed. In other words, this is what he's looking at. And he says, when I heard, my body trembled. You know, when I learn what God is going to do, and we know in the tribulation, My lips quivered at the voice. Rottenness entered my bones. That's how he felt. And I trembled in myself, that I might rest in the day of trouble. When he comes up to the people, he will invade them with his troops. It's going to be terrible. And then he says the three verses of absolute faith. Doesn't matter what you do, Father. Doesn't matter what you do, God. I'm going to trust you. You haven't answered. You haven't done what I wanted. You haven't straightened out Judah and made it righteous again in my lifetime. But I'm going to trust you. Doesn't matter. No food, I'll trust you. Though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, though the labor of the olive may fail, and the fields yield no food, though the flock be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls. You know, the reason I wrote this out by hand, then it through the years fell apart, and I have printed it since then and keep it where I pray. I also have where I pray a sign written out, he will wipe away every tear from their eyes. And when Lucretia, my first wife, was dying, and I was taking care of her, changing her diaper, spoon feeding her, I said to God, I would read this. And there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. I told him, if I have to do this for 8, 9, 10 years, I accept it. I will never leave her nor forsake her. So even if you don't heal her, I will trust you. Now, she only lived 11 months. But what if I were still taking care of her? Because it's only been, this summer will be 2 years. There's a man, an elder, out in the in the Kansas City, Missouri church. There's an elder, trying to think of his name. He took care of his wife in his 90s for 9 years. And she had total dementia. And she was small, so he'd bring her to church, bring her to the feast in a wheelchair, and I would say hello to her, and he'd say, she doesn't know what you're saying. But he would have her hair looking nice. She'd be clean, well-dressed. And you know, I've talked to him on the phone. He says, I still miss her. I wish I were still taking care of her. He had that attitude. Doesn't matter. Whatever happens, Father, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength. He will make my feet like deer's feet. By the way, this is probably a quote from David in Psalm 18, verse 33. It's probably where he got that. He will make my feet like deer's feet, just like David had in the psalm. And he will make me walk on my high hills. This little tiny overlooked book is so different and so inspiring. So I hope that at least when your troubles come, and don't we all have troubles, that the little verse, but the just shall live by his faith, quoted in the New Testament, and then Habakkuk's statement of being a just man who lived by his faith. will be an inspiration to you. So, is it time for junk food? Haven't you been waiting? The donuts are waiting. A sugar high. Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming early, getting up out of bed. How many of you like getting up early and coming early? Wish church were early. How many of you, it is a struggle to come this early? There you go. Good thing you two raised your hand, or I would have said something.